The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 64 for August 7th, 2006.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observers. Well, you know where you are. John just told you. Hi, John.
Hey, Dave.
How are you?
Fantastic. Had a pretty cool weekend.
Well, that's good. I had a crazy weekend. I had 2 gigs, so if my throat sucks, well, that's just how it goes.
Yeah, I had some gigs. My high school graduating class, we had a little impromptu get-together on Saturday at one of the local... You know, it's cool. Everybody turned out okay. It was a lot of fun to, for the most part.
That's good.
But it was a lot of fun. The most memorable thing was one kid, he wasn't at our, I'll date myself, 20th high school reunion, but he's like, dude, I remember we had a fight in third grade, and dude, you totally trounced me. I'm like, really? I suppressed that.
Wow, well, there you go. Geeks can win fights, too. There you go.
I think I played dirty, but hey.
Third grade, what do you want?
That's right. So,
So we had a really full show when I put the agenda together Friday so we could both look it over the weekend. And then, of course...
Chock full.
That's right. And then, of course, there was the WWDC announcements today. So we've got both to talk about. There's not a whole lot with the WWDC stuff, but just some stuff that maybe we'll point you to. And then we'll get into... answering your questions and addressing your concerns about Automator. We've got some stuff about TiVo and maybe even some new topics if the time gods permit. What were you going to say, John?
Well, what I found kind of funny was, we'll link to the article on the Mac Observer, of course, but it was funny because the analysts were kind of disappointed because it was what they expected. There was no one more thing.
No, there wasn't. That's right.
But so, what they announced was definitely good stuff.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So obviously the two big things are hardware-wise, of course, are the Mac Pro and the X-Serve, and then therein making the entire Mac line, at least as it exists for sale from Apple, Intel-based in 100%. So no more PowerPC processors, right? Which is, that's a big deal.
They pulled it off.
Yeah, we're here. We'll see. 5 years from now, we can decide whether or not they pulled it off, right? Maybe not even. Maybe a year from now, we can decide if they pulled it off. But developers seem excited, and there's a lot of native apps out, right? That's a good thing. So,
yeah. So the hardware.
So what'd you think about the hardware, John?
Again, nothing surprising. I mean, they have, from what I can see, the state of the art. Xeon, dual core processors.
Yeah.
The name, we kind of guessed right. Not that there was a big head scratcher, Mac Pro.
That's right.
There's only so many names.
There were a lot of names. That's right. And I think do I still have some of them here? We have the Macintosh Pro or Extreme, the Pro Mac, the Duo Mac, Mac Duo, Tower Mac. And I think that was it. So there we go. So I can take that off the agenda. Corey Cooper and Neil Sorensen said Mac Pro, and it is. You're right. The fastest Mac ever.
It always is.
Of course,
but
it is.
But this truly is. Now I do believe they hit the 3 gig.
That's right.
Which
finally,
some other company really had a little problem getting the chips out at that level in a timely fashion. Mm-hmm. So I think the Intel move was good, and these are some of the latest, if not the latest, Intel chips. So now my, dual G5 2 gig
that's officially dated now, man. Yeah.
So it's fast.
Did you order a new one today?
No.
All right. So then they went on to talk about Leopard, right? Which is, 10.5, if my math is right tonight. And I'd heard rumors. Obviously, there's plenty of people out there that'll you can get that stuff with varying degrees of reliability. But, there were a couple things, and of course, that Steve highlighted these features, and by Steve, I mean Steve Jobs, of course. And John and I wanted to talk through a couple. In fact, we were talking through a couple as we were getting ready for the show, and then we realized, wait a minute, let's just start the show. So Time Machine is the first one. You had some interesting comments about it, John, when we were talking just before the show.
And I would say, Time Machine, so for those that haven't read up on it yet, so Time Machine looks to me to be a very nicely done incremental backup utility where you really don't have to think about it. Now,
and it does something that nearly every other backup utility fails at, and that is it makes restoration a procedure that you can do without calling your local techie. That's key, right? I mean, that
yes.
It's not revolutionary, but it's key. It, you know, no one else seems to have gotten the idea that, well, backing up is great until you need this stuff. And then the restore feature is the most important thing in the world, you know, so.
And the presentation on the restore, the way it presents it to you.
Very cool.
Showing you all that stuff, and
You haven't seen it, there's a movie on Apple's site. We'll link to the Leopard section where you can see all these movies. Essentially, what it does is, let's say you open up a Finder window and you say, "Oh darn, there's a document in here 2 weeks ago, and I need a copy of it, but it's not here. I deleted it or I changed it since then." Well, all you do is you hit the time machine button, and the screen doesn't change a whole lot. The same Finder window stays up, but now you can navigate backwards. You see all the other iterations of that window behind it, and you start scrolling through until you get to the one that actually has what you want, and you highlight it, hit restore, and bam, you're back to your normal Finder, but with that file intact. Very cool. I don't know how they do it behind the scenes. I don't know how much impact it's going to have on workflow and all that stuff, but if they can pull it off, it'd be very cool.
Yeah, and I would equate it to, though it's definitely nicer than. Now, actually, you know, for the longest time, I never had to take advantage of this feature until I got a new machine. But Windows does have a system restore feature, which is somewhat similar, though.
That's right.
So from what I can see, it hinges on the software installer. So anytime under Windows you do a software install, it creates a checkpoint.
Right. And you can do other things that'll create checkpoints, but that's when it happens almost automatically. That's right.
Yeah, and then you go, and if you want to restore, it'll present it in, you know, it'll show a little calendar. You click on the date, it'll show you what happened that day, and you can go to a point, but it mainly concerns itself with system level stuff. And,
right.
And I had this happen where I installed two different network type utilities, an AT&T dialer and a Cisco VPN. And one or the other, they clobbered each other, and all of a sudden I had no TCP/IP. So I basically reverted to the point before installing those two and then just chose to install one, and everything was great. But it's mainly at the system level. The time machine is definitely at the user level, user data files and stuff, and it does present it in a very nice graphical, you know, which we've come to expect from Apple.
So again, the functionality isn't
earth-shattering,
right?
But the way they do it and the way they tune it to the user's needs, I think, is somewhat revolutionary.
It's great. Yeah, well, maybe evolutionary is a better term there, right? It just makes sense, right? I mean, when Brian was doing his keynote update, Brian, of course, was at the Moscone West, I guess, watching the keynote and posting the updates live. Many of you may have watched or read it as it happened. It was my job to sit here in my office here in New Hampshire and monitor everything that he posted and just correct for spelling and grammar. We didn't want him worrying about that on site, right? He's got enough to worry about. Just get the stuff out. We can make sure the words are spelled right. So I was reading everything pretty much as it was happening, and he really gushed over this, like you said. I mean, he really, really liked it. And I thought, and I'm reading it thinking, okay, great. Somebody, they finally got it right. But to see Brian, who's more of a, well, less of a techie, less of a geek than John and I are, but still very computer literate, obviously. To see him gush over it like this really kind of, it gave me a reality check that, wow, you know, most users really don't have a system of backing up that they trust or use regularly or all of the above. So maybe it is more of a big deal to everyone else. It might not be a big deal to all of the listeners of the Geek Gab, but there's some of you, I mean, we've got a wide variety here. And I think that there's a good percentage of you that are probably in the same boat Brian's in, going, wow, this is awesome. Because currently, you don't have a great way to back up. Of course, you could buy the PDF that Bob Levitis put out with us, but you know, that's just a shameless plug. So there you go.
I was going to mention that, for a while there, but it's something you consciously have to do.
Yeah.
This kind of does it nicely in the background, which is good, because as we pointed out with Bob, the first time most people think of backing up is once your hard drive explodes and you lose everything.
That's
then
right.
You remember. And even then, unless you have something that schedules itself, it's not something that people think about. So It's nice that Apple included it, though, as I commented, I'm sure there are some backup software makers that are shaking their fists yet again, saying,
yeah, they just stole some business. Yeah. Yeah, but that's Apple's MO. No one is allowed to be surprised at that anymore. Really, I mean, it's what Apple does. They release something. People, you know, it's a platform. People start building things on top of it. The things that Apple thinks are really great and that everyone should have, well, they give them to everyone. Now, there were things like the menu bar clock. I think it was called Super Clock from Cassidy and Green back in the day, right? Am I right about that? Wasn't it Cassidy and Green that made it? If it wasn't Cassidy and Green, it was somebody. It was called Super Clock.
Yeah.
And this was in the OS 9 days, and Apple actually bought it from the guy. Now, that's more standard is for Apple to just go and re-engineer it on their own. But you know, they certainly aren't against going out and purchasing technology and putting it out there.
Yep.
But yeah, that's how it goes. And some things along those lines are, right, like Spaces, which is the desktop virtualization thing, which you can do right now with a variety of pieces of software out there.
I think it's actually called Virtual Desktop, which we saw a couple of shows ago, and it was like, wow. Now I have to go back and just comment on why I think Brian was so impressed. Now, you and I have experienced this as well.
Yes.
Where was he?
Oh, that's right. He was in the reality distortion field.
Yes.
Good point. Excellent.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
If you haven't been to a Steve Jobs keynote, I got to say, he's one of the best presenters.
Oh, yeah.
Ever.
Very charismatic.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, Bill Gates and
nothing.
Steve Ballmer.
Nothing.
I mean, these guys just can't get people enthused.
Yeah,
whereas Steve, on the other hand, could say, the sky is blue, and you'll be like, my gosh, what a profound insight. And then you leave, and you're like, huh?
Huh? Yeah.
But,
it usually
but
takes
sure
me about 30 minutes to shake it off after I've been in one of those. Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, so Spaces, that was cool. It's as far as I can see, it's nothing, you know, it's what other people have done, but it's good that they build it in the OS. Again, some, you know, the people that make that product may be shaking their fists.
You know,
but they...
Even me, right? I don't use any desktop virtualization software. I certainly have thought, you know, a couple of times, maybe more than a couple, that, wow, you know, that I could actually see that working really well for me in certain times, but I just haven't spent the time to set it up. The other thing is, I know that with things like that, shareware like that, or even, you know, commercial apps, and of course the line is very blurred out there, there's always going to be something, and I want to state that I haven't used this particular piece of software, so this is not a review of their software, but with stuff like this, there's always something that's just a little quirky, and you know, you might run into some troubles. And even for me, I mean, because I have to rely on my Mac to work every day, I just don't, you know, I don't tweak it out that much to the point where it's got so much stuff running that I don't know where, you know, where the lines are anymore. So, you know, having it built into the OS certainly brings a comfort level to the novice user, but even to, you know, even to people like you and me. So,
yeah, and the product that we have seen, I just looked it up here, Codetech, Virtual Desktop Pro. And
is.
I'm sure that it has some features above and beyond what Apple's, you know, incorporating in the OS.
Yeah, it always will. It always will. Well, and, you know, like iChat, right? The ChatFX from Julie, from Script Software, has been doing that for a while, where you can have a blue screen effect with something going on behind you, or, you know, and various other things where you can make it so that when you move your head, it's like wiping snow off of the other person's screen and that kind of thing. ChatFX has been around, you know, for a while. It will, I imagine it will remain around, although the new iChat has a lot of those things built into it. It's also got some other really cool things with the movie sharing, the picture sharing, and I don't know if you caught this, John, but desktop sharing in the new iChat. So you can do remote control, collaboration. You know, it's almost like they've taken a bit of Apple Remote Desktop and buried it into iChat and basically given it away with the OS.
Yep. Which is now, to rewind cool slightly, now another way to solve the problem with your desktop not being big enough, and this is another thing that actually is pretty good, is now the Apple displays, the 30-inch display, $19.99.
$500 cheaper. Yep.
That's still not, you know, that's outside of a lot of people's budget.
Yeah. Yeah, but the 23 is only $9.99 now. So
that's
down about $300. Yeah. Of course, you can still get one from Dell for like what, $6.99 or $7.99, and it's just as good.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, and I have a Samsung, and I'm pretty happy with it. So. Yeah. All right, so
I have a Star Logic display that I purchased at BJ's that I'm sitting in front of here that I have on the studio computer. It's a 19-inch, you know, LCD screen. Pure crap. I highly, highly recommend you stay away from these things, unless you only want to spend $150 on a display, and then, you know, it's the best darn 19-inch LCD screen you can get for $150. So there you go. Star Logic. And I don't know if they have a URL. I'm sure it's just directs you to, you know, Korea or something.
Yeah. Now the new Spotlight, or the Spotlight enhancements. Yeah,
it also steals something from ARD. Did you catch that? From Apple Remote Desktop, lets you search across the network now, if the permissions allow it.
Gee, you know that there's another company that's kind of into search that does something kind of like that. I can't remember that. It begins with a G. Ends with an O O G L E.
Reminds with Oogle. Yeah.
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 But it's nice that, you know, Apple is embracing, though there's a whole bunch of security issues with that.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Well, in this case, now I'm wondering how they handle, I mean, I have, you know, again, we just, you know, I mean, it was just announced today. I mean, the big problem that a lot of people had is that you're storing your data on Google's servers for the benefit of being able to access it from any other machine. And I'm sure that's going to be the, maybe it's not the case with Apple.
I don't think it is.
They put that data.
I think you're actually connecting. Well, if it's using what ARD uses, you're just connecting to the Spotlight database that exists on the other computer. Now, it may not be the functionality from ARD, but I would assume that they would leverage that, right? I mean, it makes sense. So, there's a couple other cool things. One is that the dashboard now can be synced with .Mac. Did you notice that? That's pretty cool if you use .Mac. If you're a dashboard user, you know. And are you? You are. I think you use
stuff. Oh, yeah. Oh, widgets. I like widgets. I just got a book the other day from I think it was Wiley, and it's basically a tutorial on how to write widgets, which don't use any, you know, really bizarre technologies.
Right.
It's all, you know, HTML, CSS, stuff like that. The nice thing is that they include it now in dashboard, a very, very basic authoring utility. And now you had some comments a little earlier, Dave, about some of the bad things about that.
Well, they've got this one thing, and Brian actually pointed this out in the his postings, but when you're in Safari looking at a website, it seems like there's a little button you can hit, and you can go look at the dashboard movie on the Leopard pages to see this. But there's a little button you can hit that lets you make a web clipping dashboard, and which is great. So you take that web page and now it will load in your dashboard. But what you can do is you can resize that window so that all you're seeing is the portion of the page you want. Now, the interesting example that they did was a Dilbert comic. They went to the United Artists website. They found Dilbert. They brought this over into the web clipping and then sized it so all they saw was the comic. The interesting part was on the main Safari page, there was two big ads that were essentially, remember, when you visit a website that has ads, that's your, by allowing them to show you the ads is how you pay for that quote unquote free website, right? And this is the same thing at TMO. The ads aren't there, you know, for you to choose whether or not to turn them on or off. The ads are there as your way of paying to view the content that you've chosen to view. And I'm sure the people at United Artists feel exactly the same way about their Dilbert comic that they published there. So to build something that knows where to go on a given website and do that, you know, I have a problem with that, being someone who runs a business that is supported by advertising. So there's my little rant. But
people may tweak their web pages to prevent that sort of thing. Who knows?
Absolutely.
Maybe make it a random URL or some other sneaky stuff, or maybe do some digital signatures
Who knows? Or just browser sense, right? And when you see that it's coming from the dashboard widget, just, you know, put something else there, move it around. So
that stinks.
You know, it's just ridiculous to have two pieces of technology. It's like the old copy protection days, right? You know, where you've got each side trying to outdo the other, and in the end, you know, nobody wins. So,
on the other hand, you and I are both big TiVo fans, and TiVo does deprive, you know, TV networks of potential advertising revenue if you blast past the ads, which I think most people that have a TiVo, that's
I do,
kind of the point.
Yeah, and I struggled with that initially. I actually wind up getting quite a bit out of those commercials as I fast forward through them. And it's clear in the 6 years that we've had TiVo that most people that the the sponsors and the creative houses out there have actually built the commercials to get their message across even at triple speed. There's enough time for the branding message to be out there on the screen so that you actually see it while you're fast forwarding. So,
or like you pointed out to me, which I thought was very cool. One night you and I were talking. I think you and I are both Lost fans,
right?
You're
right.
Like, John, did you see the ad for the Hanso Corporation? Which, if you watch right. Lost, is the group that funded the That's island right. And all that. And I'm like, oh man, I missed it. So yep. They're creating this incentive for you to sit through the ads so you can get a little, right. You know, piece that adds to the show experience. So maybe it's just a call for
it is.
Advertisers to get a bit more creative and not expect you to just sit there watching the ads.
Right.
You know, make it worth my while, make it entertaining, or because I'll see ads and they'll catch my eye. There'll be a little something there, even though I'm blasting past it, and I'll be like, oh, wait, that looks interesting, and go back. And I think, as you pointed out, people are starting to tune their ads with that in mind. So it's just an evolution.
There you go. It's an evolution. There you go. So one other thing that you got to go listen to is in the Universal Access tab or whatever you want to call it of the Leopard screens. They have an example of this voice called Alex, which is a new synthesized voice. It sounds amazing. I actually meant to pull down the MP3 so that we could play it on the show. I'm not sure how Apple would have felt about that, but just go there. We'll put a link in the notes and you can hear it. Sounds amazing. So, and then there was one other thing I wanted to mention, John, because I know that you remember this, but did you look at what core animation is, John?
Well, I know that there's, you know, basic cores of the, there's core animation.
Core animation is new.
Oh, I'm sorry, because there were
there's core audio and there's core audio and I think core video, and now there's core animation.
Oh.
And what core animation does is it gives programmers a library of hooks to do various tasks involved in animating live, layered animation. And it really, you know, for game developers and even people that, you know, want to write productivity apps that have some smooth graphics in it and that sort of thing, can make things much, much easier. And it reminded me of something way, way back when that the Commodore Corporation called sprites on both the Commodore 64 and the Amiga. It was the same kind of thing where into the OS, they built hooks for game vendors, really, at that point in time is who it was geared towards, to write easily write routines that you know, spun graphics on the screen and did all these other very cool things. Not nearly as cool as the stuff that we all see today, but, you know, you got to remember. You know, you got to remember, 15 years ago yesterday was when Tim Berners-Lee posted to Usenet, and I'm going to try and pull it up here.
Oh, yeah, you sent me that today.
Yeah, he posted, the WWW project merges the techniques of information retrieval and hypertext to make an easy but powerful global information system. And then he went on to describe what the World Wide Web would be 15 years ago yesterday. It's not that long ago, folks.
And I'm sure some people read that and said, what a whack job. What
that's right. And I remember not very long after that when, you know, NCSA Mosaic was released and you and I sat in your room and on that old, a Mac 2, I think, or maybe it was a Mac 2 that you'd borrowed from work or something. Yeah, but no, this was, CI. I think it was the one you borrowed from work.
I may have had an SE, I think it was
It was an SE30 that you borrowed from work. Yeah, that's right.
SE30.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah. And we're like, the light bulb went on. We're like, oh,
this is going to be
this
huge.
Is the best toy ever.
Ever.
That's right. So I think before, it was core image and core audio. So this is neat because it's like a layer above.
Right. It's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Good for developers, and I'm sure a lot of them, especially the gamers, I don't know how game-worthy, you know, core animation will be. Good stuff. So they had a few other things, but I think that pretty much sums up the major...
I think so.
...breakthroughs. But good stuff. So, you know, again, the analysts are like, whatever. The stock, you know, I think pretty much did not a heck of a lot, but you know, many people...
I think it went
down
a little bit, didn't it?
Yeah, probably because there wasn't a one more thing.
Right.
Because, you know, some people were thinking an iPhone or
Well, but
you know,
why
super
would they
duper
do that?
Video iPod.
But why would either of those appear at a WWDC? I mean, unless they were going to give developers an SDK for the iPod or something, it doesn't make sense to show that at a WWDC. That's more a consumer thing, and that's not what that's for. So,
or I think they're just not ready. They have to, you know, kind of pace themselves here.
Well, they'll do a special event if they want to do it. You know, even if they do it in 2 weeks, they'll do it as a special event. I just don't think that they would show that kind of stuff to developers. So,
but this was all definitely tuned to developers. You know, just faster, better machines. Everything's Intel, and you know, and I think they handed out after the show. They you know, handed out the latest beta
developer build. Yeah,
developer build, just so they can have the latest and greatest. And and what's the target date? I think I don't know if we're going to see it at Macworld.
No, they're saying spring 07. But you know, who knows? They've been doing the Scotty principle for a while, right? With the Intel rollout. So who knows? Maybe they're doing the Scotty principle with the Leopard launch. And by the Scotty principle, I mean under promise, over deliver.
Oh, Captain! I can't give it.
That's right. I can't give it. That's right. Magically, every time the guy found what he needed in the middle of space with nothing, he made it work. So clearly, he knew going in. Right? I can do this. I just need a little bit of praise.
And as we've seen, you know, when compared to some other companies that try to kitchen sink their OS, pacing yourself to about every 18 months is probably a good OS release strategy versus
a bad deal.
Of course, Vista, which now they're pulling things because, you know, and I've been there, I do this sort of thing. Software projects have a way of getting way, way out of control. So
there was a Dilbert comic, speaking of them, that I read on Saturday that said, you know, the secretary comes up to Dilbert and says, I need a description and budget of your project. And Dilbert had something that he called the project uncertainty principle or something that says makes this impossible, because if you know what the project's about, you can't possibly know the cost. And if you know the cost, you can't possibly know what the project's about. So there you go.
And another thing, I'll toss it in here as a software guy.
Yeah.
There is a book called, you may have read it. If you haven't, it's a good read. It's called The Mythical Man Month. I'm serious. No. Yeah. And it's a book that was written many, many, you know, quite a while ago. I believe it was someone who was, you know, heading up the team that wrote IBM OS 360, and his reflection was that as you add more people to a software project, it gets slower. And it's counterintuitive initially. You think, well, you add more people, it goes faster. Well, no, it doesn't. And it was just a whole story about how software projects go bad, and adding more people actually makes matters worse. And also adding more features.
See, I thought when you said the Mythical Man Month that you'd been talking to my wife and that she was telling me that I start to get cranky, but no, that's not that. But you know, the other thing that Vista doesn't have, I don't think, is Automator, right? Which we spent quite a bit of time last week talking about with, of course, with Ricky. And we have a couple of questions that came in from you folks and some tips, actually. And the first one that I'm going to read is a tip because it does address something that we missed. John created an automator action to batch unlock files.
Yeah. And I got a smackdown here.
Well, you know, this just goes to show you that the Apple engineers really do think further down the road than you think that they do. And and by this, you know, we were talking about, John said, well, if you highlight a group of files and do Command I or go to the file menu and do get info, you get a get info box for each file. And if you just selected 1,000 files, man, you know, you're going to lunch. So, but John was lamenting that Windows, when you do that, just shows you one box for all the files as kind of a summary, and you can unlock and lock and get a size and all that stuff. And of course, Ricky and I sat here and agreed with John. Yeah. Wouldn't it?
And to me that I got to say personally, still, before you, you know, go on here. Mm-hmm. To me, that is preferred behavior. To me, that's expected. Now, maybe I've been tainted by having to use Windows on almost a daily basis.
Right.
But to me, I would expect that if I highlight a bunch of things, and I would prefer to have a summary box that lets me do something with all of those files I just selected. But go on.
So, yeah, Ricky and I were sitting here singing the Beach Boys, you know, wouldn't it be nice? And then we got the emails in, and sure enough, it is nice. It's not, wouldn't it be? It already is, you dummy. Because if you hold down the option key while you do command I or file get info, you get exactly what we were looking for, and you can do the batch unlock. You can see the group size and the whole deal. So Jesse and Jeremiah and everyone else, thank you very much for sending that in. That not only do we appreciate when you tell us that we've got something wrong, and obviously we do, but in addition to that, it's actually a tip that I have already used more than once since the emails came in. So very, very handy. Thank you. Thank you for that.
So our listeners are pretty darn smart.
Yeah, they are. And Jesse actually sent in another email about Automator. And we were, again, a thing that we were talking about Automator missing. Ricky was complaining that, you know, you have to do things one step at a time and you can't store data anywhere else. Well, you can. There, you know, you can't store data for future retrieval in Automator. There's no variables, if you will. Well, actually, there is. Somebody has written an Automator action that they call temporary storage actions. And essentially, it's an action that you pass to it whatever you want it to save. Then you go on and do other things, and then you call the action again and retrieve from it the whatever it is that you want it to do. Very, very key. I haven't messed with it at all, so I hope that it works as well as people say. But sure enough, it at least attempts to address the
and
the concern.
A tip of the hat,
yeah,
to the developer community out there.
Oh yeah.
And you know the Apple, you know, we had it in the last show notes, but the portion of the Apple site where you can say search for, you know, you give it a few keywords and say search for Automator actions to do this sort of thing, and yeah. You may get lucky, and in this case, we got lucky.
Hello, Dave and John. This is Ryan calling from Salt Lake City.
Hi, Ryan.
Love the show, and I have a question for you regarding last week's podcast about Automator. I've been trying to figure out for some time an easy way to do a live update backup, you could call it, of my Final Cut Pro project files. Final Cut Pro does the autosave, where it can save sequentially versions of the project file as you're going along on an automatic basis, which is nice, but I want to actually have an additional copy of those project files saved on a separate drive, just in case
the
drive goes out.
Yep.
To have it on a physically separate drive. So what I've done is I have a smart folder that locates all the files on the computer that are Final Cut Pro project files, and then puts them all into that smart folder. And since it's a smart folder, it automatically updates. Problem is I've been trying to figure it out, and after the podcast last week, it got me trying again, is to figure out a way to get Automator or some way to get OS X to monitor that folder, that smart folder, and automatically update it every time I save the project file or Final Cut makes a new file. It'll be added into that smart folder, and then have some way from that point for it to then be copied to another location that I choose, and so that I can have another archival copy of the project file. This is also something that may be useful for other people as well, for images or music or anything else, that any other type of file that gets updated on a regular basis. So hopefully it's something that you guys can help me out on. Once again, really enjoy the show. Keep up the great work. Thanks.
I know both John and I took a look at this one because it was something we talked about during the show, and it sure seems like it's possible to do, but there's like little half-inch gaps in the process from what I found.
Possible, I think, but I would say, based on what I know of Automator, I think we agreed on that. Automator is, from what I can see, though, hey, who knows, maybe somebody wrote
something here.
Automator is kind of something where the user, you have to
user initiate,
run an action,
yes,
or you have to drag something.
That's right.
The smart folder is actually pretty clever, but I think Automator is not the place to look.
No, because what you've got is you've got something called folder actions in the Finder. And so you can have a folder, that when you add something to it, and you wouldn't even need a smart folder. You wouldn't even need to use a smart folder for this. Just attach a folder action to the folder of Final Cut Pro, you know, auto saves, and that would work. But the problem is, folder actions are Apple scripts, not Automator actions. So you need to. So while you could create an Automator action to do this very easily, you'd then need to. Maybe you can run an Apple script that then runs an Automator action, though, and that would be the only way to do it. Otherwise, you'd have to write an Apple script to perform the whole process, and that would work. From what I understand of everything here and the testing I've done.
And you know, it's so close because Apple includes a default group of folder actions.
Yeah, but they're scripts.
One of them is called add, which when it detects that something new has been added to a folder.
Yep.
In this case, it's called add new item alert. It'll bring up a little dialogue saying, hey, dude, somebody just added something to this folder. So
they just put a copy in. You edit that script and replace the add with a copy, and you're good to go, right?
So I would say that would be a good base script to work with, the add script that's in the folder action script folder. And maybe, you know, brush up on your Apple script commands. And I'm sure somewhere in there, instead of it throwing up a dialogue saying, hey, would you like me to show you the new things that were added to this folder, which is what it does, I ran it. You could probably just replace that with a copy command or an archive command. So, you know, it's a little messy, though, because as we pointed out, Apple script is, you know...
It allows you to cater to your inner geek. Let's just say it that way.
Yeah, but it's not a nice graphical, data flow layout thing. It's you got to bring it to the next geek level. So you got to learn a little Apple script. And, you know, I did a quick search, but I'm sure somebody's written a Apple script that does a...
You may be right.
Copy. So was moving in the right direction. There were smart folders, but so I think the folder action and the Apple script is the way to go on that.
Yep. And that was stuff that we both found independently, I believe. We both researched this and came to exactly the same conclusion. So 206-666 geek is what Ryan called to leave that message, and you can do it too. I wanted to talk about TiVo. I know that John and I obviously are TiVo geeks, and there's a couple of things that have been happening in the TiVo world that are somewhat related to the Mac. Obviously, there is the mythical new version of Mac, the Mac client for TiVo to go that was supposed to come out first half of whatever.
They're kind of lagging.
They're a little slow on that. But I get the feeling, and I have no... I have no knowledge other than what we can all get on the web, but I get the feeling that we're pretty close on that. So I'm hoping that sometime soon. But there is a more pressing issue, and that is this. If you have a Series 2 TiVo and you have the TiVo-branded wireless adapter, which is one of the few wireless adapters that will actually go high speed to 54 megabits, and then you use iChat with Bonjour. Now, it just so happens here at the Hamilton Homestead, we do that because we use Bonjour for when, you know, somebody's up here in the studio and I'm down in the office, we can communicate. And of course, then Lisa, if she's over in the house, I can, iChat back and forth to her during the day, and it works out great. And that way we don't necessarily have to be logged into the main AIM servers to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have that set up, and I believe there's a couple of circumstances. One is if you've got a PowerBook or you're in a desktop Mac asleep and then wake it up while the Bonjour client is active on it. So it wakes up and then fires up the Bonjour client. The TiVo will either freeze or reboot magically. Now, I use the term magically. There's actually a lot of cursing that goes on. Nobody's really saying abracadabra, but we'll use that term here. So every time you open your Mac, everyone who's watching TV says abracadabra. And what really stinks is if it freezes, you don't know it because, unless you're actually watching TiVo, you might not know it. And so you'll miss recordings and that sort of thing. Went and replaced it with the wireless Linksys adapter, the old 11 megabit one, and it's fine. I talked to the TiVo folks about this. The engineers are aware of it. They're working on it. The problem is it's hard to diagnose because it doesn't happen 100% of the time. It doesn't happen to 100% of the people. When it happens to you, it happens 100% of the time. So it's frustrating for some of us, and they don't really know what it is, but they've got their suspicions and they are working on it, and they asked me to just pass that along. So I have passed it along, and I've done my duty for all of you, and that's just how it goes. So we had another TiVo question, but for some reason I can't seem to find it. Here it is.
Hey, Dave, John, this is Dave from Ohio. Got a kind of a geek question for you. I've been banging around and can't find a solution to. I tried Vonage, for voice over IP and that sort of thing, but my TiVo cannot dial in through the Vonage line. So I called up the local cable provider and asked them if their voice over IP would solve the problem. They said, no, it's a problem with my TiVo, and so I called TiVo, and they say, no, it's a problem with Vonage Direct, or whatever voice over IP provider I'm using. So they're kind of pointing their fingers at each other, and the bottom line is I can't get my TiVo to dial in. I wonder if you guys have any solutions. Thanks. Bye.
Well, I think they're pointing fingers because, almost rightfully so, Vonage, the modems that are in their machines and the way that they connect are pretty much incompatible with all voice over IP. But it's, of course, theoretically possible for someone to build a VoIP network that doesn't have that kind of latency, and so therefore doesn't have issues with Vonage. So Vonage points it and says, you have the wrong VoIP provider, and your VoIP provider says, well, you know, we're not built to handle that kind of traffic. And really, what they should be saying is, you idiot, and I don't mean this to you, Dave, but you know, what they should be saying is, why are you trying to dial up when you clearly have a high-speed internet connection, right? I mean, because that's, the TiVo units can connect, at least Series 2 and later, can easily connect over a high-speed connection.
And that could be it. And did he mention if he has a 1 or 2? Because I still have a Series 1. I'm happy with it. It's all paid off.
Right.
So I'm going to...
Right. Well, you can make the Series 1 work with a network, too. It is possible.
Just with a USB...
It's actually a little more complex than that. I think you got to dig into the guts. So it's not nearly as easy as it is with the Series 2. But if you have a Series 2, there are some of them out there still that when you go to reset it, when you configure it for the first time, it has to dial in. Past that, then it can connect over the network. But the first time, it's programmed to dial in. The way you can trick it is putting in a dialing prefix of #401. And we'll put the link to the website that explains this. Because that, for many folks with Vonage, that's the answer. So... And I wanted to share that while we were on the subject, even though it's not really Mac-related.
Because I did a quick search, and I found something on the TiVo community forum, which basically says anything that's not a hardwired analog telephone line, like a cell phone. Someone in one of the postings said, you wouldn't expect a cell phone connection to work like an analog line.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all sorts of things, compression, and who knows what they're doing.
I mean, the packets are getting chopped up and reassembled, and there's not an analog flow of data. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Well, also, I mean, analog modems. I mean, I'm amazed that they were able to get. I mean, what was the? Did they ever get beyond 56K? And even that was
56 was only one direction, I think. Right.
Yeah, but even doing that with a line that was designed for voice communications, that in of itself was pretty amazing.
Impressive.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, so that must tweak their network somehow to let modem calls through. Good.
No. It doesn't. It doesn't tweak the network. That actually tells the TiVo to go and use the network connection. So if you've got an Ethernet cord plugged in or a wireless USB. Right.
Gotcha, okay.
That's what it is. Yeah, sorry, I didn't.
So VoIP connections or whatever are just
not going to work.
For that. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Do we have any, we've been gabbing a long time here. I think we're
yeah, we have.
I mean, I don't know. Whoa, there's the band. I don't have anything else, John. Do you have anything else?
No, I got to congratulate you on your new family members.
Oh, yeah, we got three new rats. That's right. 206-666-GEEK is the number that you can call, and heck, we'll even play your message for the rats. But that's certainly how Dave and Ryan got their stuff on the show, and it's how you can get your stuff on the next show. The next show we will be doing will be back to normal. We do have a ton of new topics to address, stuff that you folks have sent in and asked us about, and we're going to assemble a show around those. Of course, we'll answer your existing questions or your questions about the topics we've already been discussing and kind of get back.
You put something here on the agenda. Should I read this next week? No. You were just messing with me, right?
I think I was messing with you. I don't have that copy of the agenda. I always do that for you. I like to make you think. Hey, make sure you go to Portable Media Expo in September. We got to figure out how we're getting there, John. So,
what do you mean? I think we'll fly.
Oh, no. It's overrated. So many people do that these days. Take the Pony Express. Maybe we can ride on the back of the rats.
There's Amtrak.
Yeah, that'll get you out there in a week or less. That's right.
Yeah.
Cashfly Hosting is, of course, where you've downloaded this from. And you're listening to this through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for staying subscribed. We certainly appreciate having you listen and having you contribute. Write us MacGeekGab at MacObserver.com. Skype in your questions to MacGeekGab.
And you got something to say?
Say it.
Podcast Alley, vote for us.
That's right.
iTunes, you know.
Can write comments.
We like the comments. We like the good ones. The bad ones, well, we don't like those, but...
We'll take them.
We'll take them, and we'll... What are we going to do with them?
We'll read them. We'll take them to heart. We'll ponder them. We will love them all. I do have a piece of advice, though.
Yes?
Don't get
caught.
Made up.